This is the Nature of Cities podcast. This is the Nature of Cities, a podcast about cities as ecosystems, ecosystems of people, nature, and buildings. Open space, public space, green space that makes cities livable, resilient, and sustainable. Episode 5, The City Bees, produced by Jennifer Balco. Bees have always been part of the city landscape, but around the world there's a new energy in urban beekeeping. Jennifer interviews people from Barcelona, Beijing, New York, and San Francisco to get a better idea of how beekeeping is evolving. She finds out each project and each beekeeper started in a different way, and each has a sweet story to tell.
Have you seen your new neighbor lately? He's probably buzzing around your balcony, hanging out by the flowers, and picking up food for his family back in the hive. Honeybees are not newcomers to city landscapes. They've always been around. They are part of an urban setting in the same way sparrows, supermarkets, and stop signs are. But you may be hearing a lot more about city bees these days. There's a worldwide trend to bring more beehives back into cities. From Asia to Europe to the Americas, urban beekeeping is on the rise, and each hive has a unique story behind it. Josep Perelló, an associate professor at the Faculty of Physics at the University of Barcelona, says it best.
Once you talk and you start talking about bees, you open the Pandora box in a way, because it's everything there, or you find very small and very delicate stories behind, no? And each one has a lot of interest.
How is each beehive different and interesting? Let's head over to the Union Square Green Market to hear about how the New York City beekeeping scene has changed recently.
My name is Andrew Cote. I'm the president of the New York City Beekeepers Association. I run andrewshoney.com. I'm a beekeeper. I've been a beekeeper most of my life. I keep bees in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Westchester, and Fairfield counties. If anyone knows anything, they probably know about my rooftop beehives, but really the majority of them are in the countryside.
How many rooftop beehives?
I have many, many rooftop beehives.
How'd you get into this?
I got into beekeeping because my father's a beekeeper.
How have you seen the New York City beekeeping scene change?
The New York City beekeeping scene has grown over the years. There are definitely more people doing it now than there were when legalization took place in 2010. There are several clubs now. There are more people keeping bees in New York now than ever before. More people are aware of beekeeping, and that's great. My energies have poured more into the association, the Beekeepers Association, and our charity, Bees Without Borders.
Are they just interested in the honey? Or are they interested in bee protection?
There are some people who are interested only in honey, and that's great. We need them to support our endeavors. There are people who would like to get interested in beekeeping, get their hands sticky with beekeeping. We have an apprentice program. We have classes. We have monthly meetings. There are a lot of activities for anyone who'd like to get into beekeeping here in New York City.
On the rooftops where you keep bees?
Yeah.
Are they skyscrapers or apartment buildings?
I don't have bees on any building over 20 stories high. I think 20 is pushing it, in my opinion. I have heard people putting them higher. Good. God bless them. I'm happy if the bees are doing well. But I've got them in community gardens, on private balconies, schools, synagogue, church, cemetery, hotels, private buildings in New York City.
And why do you cap it at the 20 stories?
There comes a point where it's just high and windy. I just feel that 20 is probably about high enough.
Tell me about the New York City regulation to legalize beekeeping. How did that come about?
From 1999 until 2010, it was illegal. But it wasn't made illegal targeting honeybees. Everything was made illegal beyond cats, dogs, and a few other sort of normal household creatures. There was no objection or no force against beekeeping, and when we spoke about it in the public hearings, there was not one voice of criticism. No one was against legalizing beekeeping here, or at least if they were, they kept it to themselves. The regulations talk about a safe distance from one's hive to the property line, water source, movable frames, all the usual what should be common sense moves for any beehive. You need to register the hive. It doesn't cost anything, but you do need to do that, I think, within 30 days of installation.
And you're pro-regulation.
I think things need to be regulated to some extent. I mean, we need licenses for our dogs or to drive a car or to operate a hot dog cart. And I think when you're talking about a box of 75,000 flying, stinging, venomous insects, I think it's reasonable that they're registered and that there is some sort of regulation, because not everyone is as courteous as perhaps they need to be. I know that this can be picked apart very easily. Somebody can say, oh, you can't regulate courtesy, da-da-da. So I just kind of stay out of it.
On the other side of the world, in China, a family's interest in supporting sustainable rural beekeeping sparked another idea that carried over to the capital city of Beijing. A year-long urban beekeeping training program there grabbed more attention than expected.
My name is Sara Malik, and I am co-founder and chairman of Shangri-La Farms. Shangri-La Farms is a social enterprise. We help farmers in rural China earn a sustainable income from agricultural products. We came to China originally in 2003, and my mother, she started a NGO in Shangri-La called the Yunnan Mountain Heritage Foundation. Shangri-La is in Yunnan province, which is southern China. Her NGO basically is like, it does ecotourism and handicraft cultural preservation, and she has a center in Yunnan that has a free library and gives English classes to the locals. It's really because of her we got introduced to the area, and my brother, sister, and I ended up traveling quite often to Shangri-La. And in 2008, we got involved in beekeeping in the area because Shangri-La is like this beautiful, pristine, natural place. It's on the Tibetan border, and there's just a lot of really nice places where one could keep bees. And actually, people in the area were not keeping bees before we came there because they thought it was too cold in the winter. We wanted to do a project that gave farmers or locals in the area another option for a local-based livelihood and kind of an eco-friendly livelihood. And then in 2009, I founded Shangri-La Farms with my brother and sister. Now I've been involved full-time for the last 6 years.
How did you get started with the Beijing project? Where did that idea come from?
In 2013, we wanted to bring beekeeping to the city because, you know, our office is based in Beijing. We travel a lot to Yunnan, but Beijing is kind of a big city, lots of pollution, and we wanted to encourage people to be aware of the environment and also think about more eco-friendly ways that they could contribute. My brother Safi, he started our urban beekeeping training. Basically, you know, what we do is seminars in our office with groups of about, you know, 10 people and teach them about beekeeping. And we keep bees on our balcony. We have like a kind of open area in our office. And then we give a demonstration on how you look after the bees. And if people were interested, help them set up their own beehives around Beijing.
And what's the response been? Have you gotten a lot of interest?
Yeah, we have gotten a lot of interest. Our main business is natural products, so coffee, honey, and skincare products. The way we work with farmers is we partner with them and we do a project such as the beekeeping training. Actually, our projects are more targeted towards the rural low-income communities. In Beijing, we really wanted to do it as just public awareness. So we did it for about a year and got a lot of interest and a lot of response. But we're kind of a small team and it's not really entirely our focus. So we haven't continued with the beekeeping training program in Beijing. But the response was great, actually. I think a lot of people are very interested in bees and beekeeping, especially in cities.
What was included in the training program?
We did like bi-weekly training programs. We got a lot of interest from our network, which are probably both Chinese and foreigners in their 20s and 30s. When it became more popular, we started getting contacted by a lot of schools wanting to do beekeeping classes for students. And then third, we started getting contacted by different corporate entities such as Mercedes, etc., who wanted to set up beekeeping in their offices. For us, actually, the interest was more than we anticipated and more than we were planning to manage. But we set up about 10 beehives around Beijing, more with individuals. And that was kind of our capacity of what we were able to manage for the project. But we probably trained about 100 individuals, like one-off training and introduction to beekeeping.
Has anyone from the program continued with their own hives in Beijing?
Yeah, well, we had 10 individuals who purchased beehives. And so they received a full training. There's ongoing training that we provide. And then Beijing gets quite cold, so they need training in the winter of how to keep bees so that the colonies don't die out. We gave them the full year of training. One of the recipients, he is located in 798, which is actually an art gallery kind of outside the Fourth Ring Road in Beijing. And he has one hive that he keeps on his roof. And he also was planting sunflowers and had a small garden on another part of the roof, and the bees just going to town.
For others, the beekeeping choice happened more by chance. Jaume Cloutet can vouch for that. He takes care of hives on a museum rooftop in a Barcelona park and heads up Melis Serveis Apicolas, a beekeeping services and management company. But he didn't start out as a beekeeper.
I am a mechanical engineer. People are surprised when I tell them that. I worked 6 years in a technical office. At first, I started this as a hobby. I met an old man and he said, "If you want, you help with the bees and I'll show you how it works." He had back problems and couldn't do the work anymore. I started taking some classes and bought my first beehives. I read books and watched videos, and little by little I got engaged. I got in my head that I could dedicate myself to this professionally. I started to look at the sector and what was needed to be a professional beekeeper. You need between 300 and 500 beehives to be able to make a living. I realized it was a real step forward to go from being a hobbyist to making an economic and professional commitment to produce honey. For that, I thought I couldn't face this economic challenge. But then I discovered urban beekeeping, where people value the work bees do for biodiversity and pollination. There are many opportunities in the city for research, like with the Open Bee Research Project, or for artistic, cultural, and educational applications, and to increase media awareness, and to do workshops in schools. I believe urban beekeeping is an important tool. So, with this new focus, I decided I could live professionally as a beekeeper and do it in a sustainable and environmentally friendly way.
One educational and research-related aspect of Barcelona's beekeeping initiative has taken a technology twist. A hive on the museum's rooftop has been hooked up with sensors. Perelló, who leads the University of Barcelona's multidisciplinary open systems research group and its corresponding Open Bee Research Citizen Science project, explains.
We typically work on complex systems, which means that we analyze tons of data of any sort. Based on this perspective, we found really, really interesting to study and analyze the bee's behavior. There is a lot of information there, but there is no way of extracting this information using electronic devices yet.
And why bees?
Why bees? Well, bees, if you just come back to the complex systems, that's the perfect example of a complex system. So it's a whole society there, where there are some bees doing some things, and there is, of course, the queen, no? And, of course, there is a sort of way of communication there, that one bee is communicating with the others, just with a simple movement or just with the sound. So all these questions that are just taken or generally in research, they just do that just watching the honeybee and just sitting there and writing down in a book, no, in a small notebook, and just, yeah, that's a classic way. We were thinking to do that in a much more technological way. No? Of course, there is some research on that, but it's inside the lab. Okay, so it's within a white box, in a way, fully controlled inside the lab of a given university. It came out from that, the idea of doing that as an open lab, as a city lab. So we were wanting to contribute in a very different way, coming from complex systems to this very, very difficult and very complicated challenge. And finally, we were also wanting to merge that with public participation and consider city as a lab on its own. And here it comes another element, especially in terms of bees, that you just discover that bees are really, really sensitive to pollution. So they really feel the fluctuation of ozone, for instance. And just very small fluctuations can really affect their behavior. Okay.
In which way?
In which way that they can die, for instance. So, and we were thinking that perhaps bees can act also as a biosensors in city. A biosensor that it can give you a signal that is really, really simple and really, really easy to understand. If the bees are right, we are living in a good environment, and if the bees are just suffering or the colony is dying, is that your environment is having some serious problems. So the only places, really, really in a place that you can see cars, people all around, and so, is our place, which is the Natural Museum of Barcelona. And in one of these boxes, we decide to put sensors. Okay.
How many sensors?
How many? That's a good question, because the first thing that we did in 2012 is to decide which sensors. Technologically, you can invent or you can think of a lot of sensors, or you can adapt a lot of sensors to put them inside a box, but it's not that easy. Okay, so the first thing is that what we want to know, or what are the most important variables that can help to better understand the bee's behavior. We decided with an open workshop to put sensors on weight, on temperature, inside and outside, because inside, in general, the bees keep a temperature which is nearly 30 degrees, okay, so it's quite constant, 30-something, but outside it fluctuates. So the same colony adapts themselves to keep warm the beehive, okay? Humidity, which is zero humid inside, and outside it just fluctuates again. So it's like an organism, the same colony, that adapts to, like us, you know, like a human body. Okay. The same colony is intelligent enough to, in a way, to do this sort of intelligent behavior. And the other things that we were wanting to study is how frequent was the entrance of bees, and when, and in which way, and so, okay?
What would changes in weight or temperature inside the beehive tell you?
For instance, the weight. Weight is telling you how big is your beehive, how many bees you have there. Mm-hmm. Not in an absolute way, but you can detect there the changes. Our sensors are able to detect inside the day these fluctuations. Okay, so at the same time, you can even know how many bees are inside and how many bees are not there. Yeah, and the other one was temperature. No, the temperature is like is just to know where are the bees inside the beehive. You can even and even check that what science is saying, that they keep warm at 30 something degrees, if it is true or not. No, if there's no, what is the temperature inside the box? But then the important thing is to compare this temperature with respect to the other one, which is the one outside.
Keeping cities healthy is important. Keeping bees healthy, that's critical. That's why Terry Oxford got involved with beekeeping. Here's her story.
I'm an urban rooftop beekeeper in downtown San Francisco, and I've got a dozen or so hives at any given time. I like to keep my beehives on restaurant rooftops, and there's a type of chef that I work with, and it's always the same type. They are individuals that really understand the plight of bees and what bees are up against. So that creates the kind of relationship that I will work with. I get asked all the time by people, will you be my beekeeper? And I mostly say no, because I find that most people will ask me the same question over and over again. They'll say, how much honey will I get and how much per pound? I can't work with that because my thing is sustainability and bee health. And that question doesn't go well with how much honey am I going to get. The way that I beekeep, it's a little bit different. My main focus right now is pollination. City pollination, I'm very, very concerned about trees, especially with this drought we're having in California. Bees are a great way to get the message across that some things are sacred, that some things are not a commodity and shouldn't be monetized and just, you know, valued for their ability to make us money. The pollinator system is a life system that we really, really need, and we're going to find that out very, very quickly if the pollinator system collapses, which I think it is in a state of right now. Pollinator system is, there's so many species that act as pollinators that work, you know, double, triple, you know, so they work so hard to pollinate, and what they're doing is gathering food and stores and supplies for themselves, but in the process, they're interacting in that amazing way between flowers and insect. So flowers and insect are working together. The flower is the reproductive system of the plant. So bees and other pollinators are working in this delightful way to help other species grow, develop, and reproduce. And then in the exchange that they get is their food source. They get their food source from flowers and plants. So I don't know of any other interaction on this planet that is just so amazing, where basically insects are helping plants to reproduce. I'm not a scientist. I am simply a mom and an environmentalist and an artist. So I see things in this way. I see that interconnection between life systems that keep each other alive and in turn keep us alive. And that pollinator system of birds and insects and then healthy living plants that are not GMO'd or monocultured or filled with pesticides, that is the system that we really need to support, because that's the system that is under siege right now, with our agricultural farming practices and with our ability to take away all the land and potential food for all of these creatures.
How did you get into beekeeping? What was the moment that you knew you would be a beekeeper?
I started beekeeping in 2008, and I've always been on rooftops in San Francisco. I spent the day with a beekeeper in the 80s, and it just really planted something in me. And then in the early 90s, I started working for Tree People, a nonprofit tree planting organization in Los Angeles, and worked there for several years. And in that process, I really learned about pollination, about trees, because trees require all sorts of pollinator species in order to have their seeds set. But really, I think the pivotal thing for me was spending the day with a beekeeper in the 80s, and that was in the Sierra Mountains near Mammoth. I spent the day with my father and this beekeeper who had hundreds of hives, amazing old guy, and I don't know, something happened that day. And they say that the bees choose the beekeeper, that it's not the other way around. And I believe that that's what happened that day, that because it just never let go. I always wanted to be a beekeeper after that. But it didn't make sense in my life until I moved to San Francisco, you know, with living in a high rise. And it was like, oh, there's a space. It's funny, you know, it's more of a lifestyle as opposed to a life for me. A lot of people get into beekeeping thinking that they can be a commercial success. And I unfortunately have to have a day job because I've never... You know, maybe I'm not successful as a beekeeper in terms of making money because it's not as important to me. It's really all about the soul of the planet for me.
What's the most important thing you've learned from beekeeping? What's an experience that you'd like to share with others who are interested in potentially setting up an urban beehive?
I think people can really hear bees. We have such an intense, intimate relationship with them, even if we don't know it, because they're responsible for our food. And so that relationship, I think, will become more clearly focused for more people over the next decade. The best thing you can do for yourself is to save bees, because whatever you do to save a pollinator will save humans, because those things are more green space, less chemicals, clean water and air.
If this gets you thinking about becoming an urban beekeeper, Cote has some words of wisdom worth taking to heart.
Because I would suggest that they find a mentor and work with that mentor for at least 1 year. And that's after having read many, many books and having taken the course and having had some hands-on experience. I do not think that just getting a box of bees and dumping them onto the roof is a very smart idea. Yet, that's what many people do. And that's why, that's one reason why we get so many swarm calls.
And if you want to help urban bees stay healthy, Oxford has a few practical things you can do right now.
Another thing that beekeepers can do, or people that are just concerned, is making sure that street trees are taken care of and making sure that they get water. Because the last thing we want to do at this point in a heated climate is lose our green canopy. If we don't have a green canopy, I don't know, that's pretty much it, isn't it? To focus on planting something and keeping things green is the best thing that you can do right now. Again, you're housing a lot of natural life. And then you're also protecting the cities by having more of a canopy. The best thing to do is to spend your money wisely by buying organic plants and make sure that they're not planted. You got to ask these hard questions: is this plant is it a GMO seed? If it is, don't buy it. And is it filled with toxins and pesticides? So ask those questions and then buy pollinator-friendly plants. So those are anything that grows near you that is food for another, for a species. For here, that's rosemary, lavender, fennels, things like that really feed bees. So you can do like little gardens, you can support community gardens, and you can be vocal as for organics in those gardens.
Whichever way you go, one thing is pretty certain. As Clotet puts it,
són uns animals que desperten molt romanticisme. Crec que la gent a la que els comenci a conèixer s'acabarà enamorant de les abelles com ens ha passat a nosaltres.
Bees are animals that wake up a lot of romanticism. Once people get to know them, they will fall in love with them like it happened to us.
This is Jennifer Balco for The Nature of Cities.
And I'm your host, David Maddox of New York City, founder and editor of thenatureofcities.com. You've been listening to This is the Nature of Cities podcast. Produced by The Nature of Cities. Music by David Maddox. Copyright 2015, The Nature of Cities, all rights reserved. For more information about this or other Nature of Cities productions or publications, see thenatureofcities.com.